I'm joined now by an election protection attorney, Richard C. Bell, who's also the author of the new book, Voting, The Ultimate Act of Resistance. Isn't that true? He's a legal analyst and commentator in the areas of civil rights and voting rights, police reform, and liability issues. You can go to his website at richardcbellesque.com. He was on election, on location, by the way, in Pennsylvania's Montgomery County on Tuesday, and has over 15 years of experience fighting for voting rights. He joins us now. Once again, Richard C. Bell, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Oh, Laura, very well. You sound well today, and I just couldn't wait to talk to you this morning.
Well, me too. Thank you. And I sound well because I actually slept more than 3 hours last night. And that hasn't happened in a number of days. And this morning, the matcha latte was just because I was used to it, not because I was desperate to keep my eyes open.
Don't make it too much of a habit.
No, that's why I can't do coffee. I do a matcha, I do a chai, and then I just go cold turkey for nothing and just have my hot water, which I like even better. But Richard C. Bell, you also have burning the midnight oil and probably burning the candle at both ends, as you often do as an election protection attorney during election season, and this was no exception. The president, as you know, has filed all these lawsuits, and he, from yesterday's, can we call it a press conference, where he just decided to download in many ways? What's ahead of us?
That would be a real stretch to call it a press conference or even to call it an address to the nation. I would call it an out-of-control denigration of democracy.
Well, there you go. Not quite as pithy, but I'm with you. Richard, what can we look forward to? And looking forward is a misnomer, but he has four lawsuits. He is saying that this has all been fraudulent. He misconstrues counting ballots versus casting ballots, and that counting ballots somehow is fraudulent. But he still filed the lawsuits nonetheless. Does anything concern you? Does anything have legs?
Okay, I'd say the only one that has toes might be Pennsylvania, if the number of ballots that come in during the three-day period after Election Day could overturn Pennsylvania, which at the moment doesn't look likely. And like I said, I think that has toes, not legs. The others, I think what we all, obviously you understand, the audience also needs to understand, is that in court, you know, in election contests, you have to challenge enough individual ballots with real evidence, not some rhetoric on television, but real evidence to throw out enough ballots for fraud or improper counting in order to overturn the vote count. So where are we right now? So we're in, for instance, Nevada. This morning, the Trump campaign says it's going to file in federal court that 10,000 non-residents voted. Well, where's the evidence? Because first of all, non-residents, if you're a part-time resident or a student in another state or someone who recently moved, you can vote. So there's a real explanation for why ballots are mailed to people out of state in Nevada. And that's going to be filed. The two candidates filed yesterday, Republican, he's going to join them. Arizona. This morning, there's going to be a hearing. This is Truelar. Trump wants to intervene in Maricopa County because they gave one voter a Sharpie when there was a problem with the machine so she could fill out her paper ballot. And they're arguing that a Sharpie as opposed to another writing instrument was made for a fraudulent vote.
You don't mean the president to whom you can add Sharpie Gate to one of his conspiracy theories.
Very good.
He's
against Sharpies. Good point.
Huh. You can't mean the same man who drew to let people know about a hurricane in some way that he is now saying Sharpies should not be used. Well, that is just too much. That's rich, wouldn't you say?
That is very rich. And that was a good one. Very good one. I like that. Now in Michigan. So this morning, we're going to have a ruling, but the judge tipped her hand yesterday because they said they want to stop the count in Michigan because of irregularities on how close the election observers could be in Detroit. And the judge said yesterday, you know, I haven't really seen any evidence at all. And more important is that it's kind of moot because the count in Michigan is basically done. So that's another silliness.
So I want to drill that home, though, for people, Richard. I want to drill that home because I want people to understand when what Trump is asking for in those jurisdictions is not, or in Pennsylvania in particular, or Michigan, or now you're saying in Nevada, it's not that he is saying, although we don't know what he's saying, there's no real evidence of it, what his it's about the relief that's requested. Because a court is waiting to hear what relief you would like them to provide you. They don't just want to sort of be the parent separating, fighting children. They want to actually know at the end of the conversation, what would you like them to do about it? And when you talk about what you have to do about it, it has to be something that is still relevant. And so when you make the point about, well, you're asking us the opportunity, you said that you want to be able to observe the count of the ballot. Well, the count's already been done. And also, if what you're saying is you have no evidence or any suggestion that looking at me counting it will somehow change the tabulation, it's just a way for you to have better access, then you're not really asking the court for any relief they can provide that would change the election, right?
Exactly, Laura. This isn't, you know, some rhetoric on his reality TV show. This is court where you and I are very familiar and comfortable with. And when I go into court and I try cases for a living, if I say to the jury, hold me to my proofs and I have no proofs, then I lose. And when you go before a judge and you say, I want this relief, and I say, well, first of all, like you said, it's moot, it's gone, the count has happened, so I can't give you that. And by the way, did you have any evidence? And the answer right now is no.
And, Richard, you have to also, what's important, I know you know this for election protection law particularly, you know, when you talk about the evidence that's out there, talk to us a little bit about how you get it. Because it's not something for a lot of these issues in terms of fraudulent count, for example, or somebody who they are claiming that may have been out of state or not qualified or whatever it is. There is actually a timeliness of having to even gather the evidence, right? I mean, you have to be able to have the evidence at the time of the election, because it's very difficult to go back in time right now and try to recreate the circumstances and have some viability in court, right?
Great point, Laura, because this is how it works in real life, not in his reality TV show. In real life, in election contests, you gather the evidence on election day in real time. When I see a voter that's been denied, we get an affidavit right then and there. We make an application to the election judge. You gather the information in real time. And I don't know, Trump said they had 50,000 poll observers there. Why didn't they gather the election in real time? Maybe because it didn't happen. And if you're talking about the vote count, well, every time they've gone to court saying their observers aren't allowed, the judge said yesterday to the Trump lawyer, there were not Trump observers there? And he said, no, they were there. They just we weren't all close enough. They're okay, fine. It's a pandemic, so okay, everybody can get within 6 feet. I mean, in court, they have to sheepishly admit they don't have the goods. And getting the goods 3 and 4 days out almost never happens. Just doesn't happen.
And speaking about the terms of the number of days here, because you were actually in Montgomery County in Pennsylvania on Tuesday. And I wonder, people are looking, we're of course all making fun of Nevada because I don't know who's there. They keep saying they must be counting rice grains, not ballots, because the efficiency it's happening in Nevada versus what's happening in a place like Pennsylvania or other states and Michigan is really mind boggling. But maybe there's some really good reasons for it. But tell me about why this ballot counting process is taking so long in places like Pennsylvania and also other states.
Oh, great reason. In Pennsylvania, it's because the Republican state legislature would not pass a law that the governor wanted that the vote-by-mail ballots could be processed and entered into the system on a rolling basis like they do in Florida about 22 days out. Pennsylvania, no, the legislature said you can't start doing anything till election day. So this is what you get in a big state like Pennsylvania. When the Republicans wanted it that way, now they complain it's going too slowly and so many votes are coming in. So it's a silliness because they created the situation, now they complain about it.
Well, you know, when you cut off your nose to spite your face, it's almost the, you know, you get annoyed when others can smell the BS and you can't. Because that's what I'm seeing right now.
Absolutely. And your face doesn't look good, right?
No. And there's always the aesthetic issue about this. But I have to ask, you know, this is, we're all looking at the popular vote right now. We know that Biden is leading in the popular vote. He appears to be leading, therefore, in the Electoral College count. But there has been this talk, and I wonder if you are familiar with it, the idea of faithless electors. And people are talking about this notion of faithless electors being those members of the United States Electoral College who decide not to vote for the president or the vice presidential candidate for whom they pledged to vote. I've been hearing a little bit from people like Ron DeSantis, who's been floating this sort of faithless elector plan for places like Michigan or Pennsylvania. And I believe even Lindsey Graham was alluding in some way to the way in which you could invalidate different votes. Where do we stand in this issue of faithless electors? Is it a possibility that there could be some sort of repudiation of even this election vote tally?
Well, the answer is possibility, yes, because this summer, the U.S. Supreme Court, what their ruling was, is that states may require electors to support the popular vote winner. But they're not required to. They just are allowed to, and they can enforce their laws on it. So then you have these states like Pennsylvania or Florida or Georgia, where you've heard threats, at least in the media, that maybe we'll claim when it comes time to have our electors appointed that we're going to appoint the Trump electors and not the Biden electors, even though the popular vote went the other way. But we think, not that the court has it proven, but we think there were irregularities and it wasn't a fair election, so we're going to put in our slate. So the answer is technically yes. Then what will happen with that will be litigation. It will go up to the Supreme Court. This is not a place anybody wants to go.
You know, I think that's such a true concept because people, you know, this idea of, I'm waiting like many other people in this country and across the globe to see at what point people will, you know, sort of tap out. At what point, even if Trump does not throw in the towel, if he were to lose, at some point, would the towel be thrown towards him by the Republican Party to suggest, no, you don't want to go down this road here of encouraging faithless electors for the very reasons that you're talking about from earlier about how the Republican Party in Pennsylvania didn't want to tabulate early. And now they have this dilemma of slowed and delayed tabulation. At some point, you know, what you do in the dark will impact you when you most need it. And so I wonder if this is a conversation that we'll continue to have, Richard, about the days of faithless electors or conversations being numbered. But I wonder also for you, who do you think is going to ultimately decide this election? Because I know right now all the votes have been cast. They're being tabulated. We know the map and what it looks like. What is the likelihood that you see the Supreme Court ever weighing in on this issue? Are we destined to repeat Bush v. Gore, or is this really at this point apples to oranges?
I think we're apples to oranges. First of all, we have basically six states out there, not one like we had in Florida, because obviously he's going to go for a recount in Wisconsin. He's going to still litigate Michigan. Pennsylvania may be a recount depending on the numbers. Georgia most certainly will be a recount. Nevada and Arizona, we don't know yet. So those six are in play on some level, either recounts or lawsuits. This isn't Florida where you're focusing on A, one state, B, hundreds of votes as the margin, and C, it was about specific ways of counting votes because of those hanging chads and things of that nature. So what you have here is this, we can't call it a strategy. They're just throwing out these six states with six different issues for the most part and saying, okay, these generalizations happen, but I don't have evidence. But at some point, it comes down to, is it moot? Meaning, is the issue really been decided? Because if, even in Pennsylvania, if the issue goes back up to the Supreme Court about whether or not the state Supreme Court was within its power to allow the ballots to be counted 3 days after, as long as they're postmarked on election day, even if the Supreme Court took that, and even if the conservative majority ends up agreeing that it shouldn't have happened, you got two problems. Number one, you'd have to show that there's enough votes out there that would overturn Pennsylvania, because otherwise, what's the issue? It makes no difference. The court shouldn't be in the business of giving advisory opinions. Like you said, everything has to be an actual controversy and a harm that can be redressed. And number two, why is the court looking at this when you, like I said, you don't have a difference that it can make in the election? So it's really like some kind of theoretical law school proposition. So you have to hope that the Biden wins most of these six states, and all of this, whatever the Trump campaign tries to do with their so-called strategy, it won't make a difference anyway. And courts, generally speaking, as you know, do not like to get involved when, number one, this kind of controversy at the Supreme Court, where it could have an effect on the election if they don't have to get involved. And number two, when it's not really a controversy, it's been decided we don't give opinions advisory. We only give opinions if it could actually affect the turnover of the election.
Actual case and controversy, a phrase that we're going to hear a lot about, and now it's explained well, of course, by Richard C. Bell. Before you go, I have to ask you, you know, when you think about the one aspect, and you mentioned that although none of the lawsuits that the president has filed or his campaign has filed really have any legs, the one that might have toes, I love that phrasing, is in Pennsylvania. And here's one reason I wonder about whether the Supreme Court will weigh in on that case in particular, because, as you know, they said, look, we're not going to weigh in because we can't weigh in the way you'd like. Back to that concept of relief, you wanted an expedited ruling in time for the election. We're unprepared to be able to move that fast. And even the most recent addition to the Supreme Court, Justice Amy Coney Barrett, didn't even have time to be fully read up on the briefs in order to even weigh in. But they did say we could, essentially, since still before us, we could, in fact, still rule on this issue. And what people look for at this point, Richard, is the idea of, although they're not going to be deciding, perhaps, who won or the retabulation of things, what they may still look at is whether the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania was entitled to even extend the deadline when the state legislature said they could not. Because this speaks about what the Constitution says about whose job it is to be able to decide the time, place, and manner of elections, right?
Yes, they could say that, but the other argument here is, as you know, what's called the reliance theory. And reliance theory is, okay, we disagree with that court. They should have been able to do that. But we, the Supreme Court, let it go forward. And the voters of Pennsylvania relied on the fact they were doing the right thing by making sure it was postmarked by Election Day and it would get counted for 3 days after. So basically, the Supreme Court told you what you were doing was legal. And now what? Retroactively, they're going to take away your vote? That would be outrageous to me.
That's a great point, especially since they were the ones who could have weighed in earlier and did not. And they contributed to that public reliance by saying, well, the Supreme Court didn't say I couldn't, so let's just keep moving. Great point. We'll see what happens, of course, because you know what? Until the fat lady sings and sings and sings, we all got to hold our breath still, because we got a long way to go in figuring out what's going to happen between now and January 20th. Richard C. Bell, thank you for your time, as always. Great to hear from you and learn from you as well.
Oh, no, Laura, thank you. It's always an honor to be on your show, and keep doing the great work that you do.
Thank you. You as well. Keep fighting the good fight. We'll be right back after a quick break. That was Richard C. Bell, author of the new book, Voting, the Ultimate Act of Resistance. And man, isn't that true. We'll be right back.